ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Questions. What is the main why in our devotional life? Are we driven by the desire to be happy? We are all hankering after pleasure. Anandamayo bhasat. The living entities like the Lord are full of consciousness and they are after happiness. The Lord is perpetually happy, and if the living entities associate with the Lord, cooperate with Him, and take part in His association, then they also become happy. That's a quote from Srila Prabhupada, presumably. Is this why we serve Krishna, or is it a desire to make Krishna happy? It's both. The two are inseparable. We can't be happy unless we think to make Krishna happy. And if we try to make Krishna happy, then suddenly we ourselves will become happy. In the beginning, we often tell people, if you want to be happy, you have to serve Krishna. When they understand more about Krishna consciousness, we tell them, don't think about yourself, just think how to make Krishna happy, which is the constitutional position of the jiva, is to serve Krishna as his selfless servant. So that's really at the highest stages of bhakti, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced us to. We hear a lot about prem. But prem is not something for us to enjoy. The very nature of prem is that one gives oneself to the other without personal desire. The other means Krishna. Krishna is the proper object of love. Asleshava padaritang pinashtu mama darshanan marmahatam karotu vayata tata vavidatatu lampato mat prananatas tu saivana paraha. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the mood of Radharani, prays that you may make me happy by embracing me, or break my heart by trampling me underfoot. But in any circumstance, I accept you as the Lord of my life, even though I'll stick with you, even though you may not stick with me, being lampat, being a debauchee. So that's the highest stage. And yeah, we also become happy by serving Krishna. But if we all the time think how I will become happy by serving Krishna, then we never really become happy, because we're thinking of our own happiness, and bhakti thing means to serve Krishna. There was a verse from Bhaktivinoda Thakur which I wanted to quote yesterday, but I couldn't remember it, so I'll quote it now. It's appropriate in this connection also. Atmanivedan tu apade kari hoino paramashuki duk dure gelo chintana rahilo. Chodike ananda deki. He says that by totally submitting myself to you, Krishna, atmanivedan tuapadekari, committing myself, surrendering myself at your lotus feet, I've become supremely happy. All my troubles have gone far away. I have no more anxiety, and in all directions I simply see bliss. So note here that Atmanivedan, the word, comes first, submitting ourselves to Krishna. As a result of that, we get happiness. So definitely we become happy by serving Krishna, but that is on his terms and conditions. As long as we think it's on our terms and conditions, then we don't really enter into bhakti at all. this question from Prem Bhakti Chandrika. How do we kam krodh moha lobha mad matsarja dambha shaha shtane shane nijukta karibo? So I will engage lust, greed, illusion, envy, and pride in their proper places. What are these? What are the proper places of these? Well, they just read a little bit more. Don't stop reading there, because Narottam Das himself says, Kama Krishna, what is that? Kama Krishna Arpane, Krodha Bhakti Dveshi Jane. He describes that our desire should be offered in the service of Krishna. Our anger should be against those who are envious of devotees. And what is that? Moha Nija Ishta Deva Bine. I become bewildered, disturbed if I don't get the association or service of Krishna. So that's described there. About envy, I've discussed this many times. Look on the end. Ask Vrindavan Chandra. Discussed many times. Common question. As Vrindavan Chandra means he'll tell you which lecture you can listen to on the internet. Number three, can you explain the three types of Praman and their respective scopes in the regard of attaining knowledge? Oh, that's a very big topic. Actually, there are many types of Praman, but they're subsumed within three categories. Shabda, Anuman, and Pratyaksha. Shabda means hearing, doesn't mean hearing the peacocks calling. It means hearing Shastra, Shruti Praman. Shruti also means that which is heard. Shabda means sound or word. Anuman means hypothesis. Guessing, but reasonable hypothesis, not some mad guessing. And pratyaksha means direct sensual experience. So of these, only shabda is considered to be totally reliable, because we may guess wrongly, and our sensual experience is limited. And yeah, the sensual experience, and then Anuman means the platform of the mind and the intelligence, the platform of the intelligence. But Shabda means that it is authoritative. Shabda means to hear the Vedas. The Veda means knowledge. It doesn't mean someone's idea. The knowledge of a fact is independently and eternally exists. As long as a phenomenon or item exists, knowledge about it also exists independently of that and inextricable from it. For instance, as long as this microphone exists, we can say that it is, I guess Freudians would say it's phallic-shaped. Okay, so that's a fact about it. So that fact about it, it exists. If you can write it down, but the fact is as it is. It's inseparable from the very nature of the microphone. So similarly, the Vedas give knowledge of reality. So the Vedas eternally exist, and they're authoritative. Others, the senses are imperfect, sensual perception is imperfect, because we all have defects. And one of them is, in the material world, everyone has inherent defects, one of which is to have imperfect senses. For instance, one cannot see with one's eyes closed. One cannot see what is behind the head without turning the head, and then it's no longer behind the head. One tends to be illusion, so that even though... another part of imperfect sense is that we may see something and misunderstand it to be something else. We have the tendency to make mistakes. We have the tendency to be an illusion, which means we may wrongly interpret what we see, or touch, or taste, or smell, or feel, or hear. We wrongly understand it. And we have the tendency to cheat. So we may misrepresent what we see, touch, smell, taste, feel, or hear to others. But Shabda is perfect. It doesn't mean that we are perfect. We may misinterpret it also, so it has to be heard from a perfect source. That's it in brief. Otherwise, you can go on and on and on discussing this. This topic is discussed in detail in a book by Sahotra Swami. It's called Substance and Shadow. I believe it's in that book. He just said it's the main topic of the book, or the topic of the book. So if you want to know, read that book. One of my disciples, Gokul Chandra Prabhu, he thought he would make some research into that. So I said to him, well, how many lifetimes do you want to spend? You can go on and on. Practically any subject. There's no end to it. He wanted to research it, and because in a course he was in Mayapur Institute of Higher Education or something. In the class, all the devotees were asked to give some presentation on different topics, and he gave one on the three kinds of praman, evidence. And in the course of presenting that, he said, if we hear a shabda means sound, so if we hear a cow mooing, he asked the others in the class, is that one kind of shabda that we accept as evidence? And the most of the devotees there said yes, and he was so disgusted with that, he thought to make some more research. But I don't think he ever published anything about that. For ISKCON and Varnashram, this is another topic I've spoken on many, many times. ISKCON is not meant for mundane welfare work like opening hospitals, etc. In light of Varnashram Dharma, would it be wrong for those devotees who are already professional doctors to open a hospital which not only deals with the problem of the body but also provides spiritual care of its patients? Would not this be part of developing in terms of Varnashram? The same could be. The same could be. No full stop. Seems that whoever was typing this didn't finish the sentence. It's another topic I've spoken on many times. Anyway, in brief, spoken on many times is, whoever's asking this question, please write to Vrindavan Chandra, who's involved classifying, categorizing my lectures. So you can ask him and he'll tell you which lecture to download and listen to. ISKCON, as I understand it, Srila Prabhupada meant it to be a Brahminical society. It's not that ISKCON has to do everything in the world. There may be many devotees who do many things, but the core society is meant for Brahminical activities, such as worshipping the Yajan Yajan, Partan, Dana, Pratigraha, is meant for performing sacrifices for oneself and for others, studying Shastra, explaining Shastra to the others, and the Brahmanas individually accept charity and give charity. So as far as feeding poor people, that is, well, if there are poor people in the state, that is particularly the job of the kshatriyas, the leaders, to see that everyone is fed, kshatriyas and vaishyas. Hospitals, well, as Srila Prabhupada said, you don't find any descriptions of hospitals in Vedic culture. Srila Prabhupada said because they had different priorities. They were more interested in the spiritual care rather than the bodily care. There may be other reasons for that also. But there were no hospitals as such. So if devotees want to, well, if we're talking about Varnashram society, then yeah, there's this kind of thing, health care and all this, that's not directly taken care of by brahmanas, so others may do so. Otherwise, then those who are businessmen, you may say that, well, devotees, ISKCON should also open factories, because why not? If you open a hospital, then you can open a factory and you can to engage people. So Srila Prabhupada wrote about that also in one book. That's, well, it was an essay which is now published in Hindi it's called Karma Yoga. I think in English it's called Message of Godhead. And he said that those who own factories, they can engage their employees in kirtan and give them prasadam. But he didn't himself give any indication that he wanted ISKCON to open factories or hospitals. So, the relationship between a disciple and his diksha and shiksha gurus. Can a disciple approach his spiritual master and ask permission to approach another guru to become his shiksha guru? In other words, you approach another guru and that guru would become that disciple's shiksha guru, not that the disciple would become the shiksha guru of the guru. Or would that be offensive? Well, that's allowed within Shastra. But generally, as Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport, that one who one approaches in the beginning of one's spiritual life and who continually instructs one generally becomes the Diksha Guru. So it is also allowed that one approaches the Diksha Guru and asks if he can take Shiksha from others. It doesn't mean one rejects the Diksha Guru, but that one also takes Shiksha from others. Is that offensive? Not intrinsically offensive. It might be if one has the attitude of being disrespectful to one's Diksha Guru and thinking, well, you're useless. What is the difference between getting Shiksha from other senior devotees and establishing relationships with someone as one's Shiksha Guru? What if the disciple is not granted such permission by his Diksha Guru? What is the difference between getting Shiksha from other senior devotees? Well, in one sense, all Vaishnavas are gurus. Vaishnava Svapacha Guru, even if he's not Shadkarma Nipano Vipra Antratanta Visharadaha, a Vaishnava Guru Nasyat, Vaishnava Svapacha Guru, who, if someone is a Brahmin, very expert in performing his Brahminical activities, and very expert in chanting mantras, is very learned in mantras and various procedures, but is not a Vaishnava, he's not really fit to be a guru. Whereas someone, even if he's born in a family of dog eaters, in which case you wouldn't expect him to be very cultured or learned in spiritual matters, without technical knowledge, but such a person is fit to be a guru because he's a Vaishnava. His guru means who teaches the highest benefit. Tasmat gurung prabhadyaita jignyasu shreya uttamam. One should approach a guru to inquire about one's ultimate benefit. So because a Vaishnav can tell us that the ultimate benefit is to surrender to Krishna, therefore a Vaishnav, even if not very learned, is a guru. Although, if you're not very learned, you may not be able to dispel the doubts of the disciples. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he somewhat more qualified that by saying, Kiva Bipra Kiva Nyasi Shudra Kene Noije Krishna Tattva Veta Shri Guru Hoy. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu he underscored that it doesn't matter, it doesn't depend on one's social position, as whether one's a Brahmana, Shudra, Sannyasi, or whatever, but if one knows the science of Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada translated this Krishna Tattva as the science of Krishna, then he is a guru, is fit to be a guru. So, of course, there are other qualifications. One could be a university professor and very expert in explaining the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and at the same time break all the four regulated principles. So such a person, simply by superficially knowing, would not be fit to be a guru. So real knowing means to act. So all Vaishnavas are, in one sense, a guru. But informally, casually, taking shiksha from others. Actually, it's not really casual, but without establishing a formal relationship of guru and disciple. And that goes on in Vaishnava society. But to consider someone as one's guru, that is quite a commitment, because one has to surrender. So there is a difference between getting shiksha from senior devotees and establishing a relationship with someone as one's shiksha guru. It may not always be formalized. It may be that just as one regularly hears from someone over a prolonged period, and it's not even that one may say to the other, "Well, can you be my? Are you my shiksha guru?" or any such thing. But it's a natural kind of relationship that comes about by the activities of being a disciple, namely serving, hearing submissively and then serving. So even though it may not be formally ratified that this person is a disciple in relationship to another who is a guru, that there may be more of a guru-disciple relationship than with those who are formally initiated, but who don't hear so well and don't serve so well. So there are many points about gurus, and it seems almost every year this question came up due to some recent GBC resolution about shiksha gurus. And it seems almost every year there's in the GBC resolution some new resolution about gurus, because it's potentially explosive subject, that one is supposed to place one's life in the hands of the guru. The gurus, their great power is conferred on them. Very influential. If someone thinks of someone else as a guru, then that person becomes very influential, especially has many disciples. So the guru principle, and that of having a worldwide institution with many initiating gurus within it, and shiksha guru, different kinds of gurus. It's how to contain it all, if at all one thinks there's a need to contain it, and how to balance the needs of the institution with the requirements of the institution with that of strong-minded gurus. Because after all, if one is to be a spiritual leader or any leader, it's not just some figure who holds a flower and smiles. It has to be a very strong-minded and principled person who gives instructions which influence, which can radically influence people's lives. So although the basic instructions are the same for everyone, four regulated principles, 16 rounds, etc. But there may be some personal instructions that the guru gives, and that may differ from those that others give. So it becomes quite a complex topic, which we'll see how things develop over the years. We're all guinea pigs in the ISKCON laboratory. But anyway, Krishna's overseeing us. I'm not sure how much can be done by making resolutions at GBC level, because people tend to take other people more seriously than ordinances. Ordinances means rules that are given, laws. So it's the gurus and disciples, that relationship is a dynamic relationship, and how much it can be controlled and directed by GBC rules remains to be seen. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was it him or Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur? I can't remember. I believe it's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I believe it was in that famous essay of his, Putana. Yeah. He writes about how the dynamic spirit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's of movement, or the dynamic spirit of spiritual life in the various churches and institutions, they try to corral that. But in doing so, they stifle it. So how to keep the spontaneous mood of devotion while maintaining an institution? It's almost the two are almost contradictory. But another problem is when what might seem to be the spontaneous spirit of devotion is spontaneous but not necessarily pure devotion. It gets mixed up with various material motivation, so that also becomes a problem. But yeah, on the whole, my outlook is we'll have to see how things evolve, and things may go on evolving as long as ISKCON exists, because as I said, it's we're dealing with persons, and who's going to be a guru or a spiritual leader, we expect them to be dynamic and strong-minded people. If we denature them to being initiating machines, some kind of formal initiators, then what's the meaning of being guru? The essence of the guru-disciple relationship is one of imparting and receiving knowledge, of shiksha. Shiksha is the essence. So this knowledge, it's not simply formal knowledge, academic knowledge. That's why I often sound a word of caution about these courses, which Bhakti Shastri and other courses, which Srila Prabhupada, he wanted them instituted. But we shouldn't think that because one has undertaken a course and maybe passed, and one can now introduce oneself as a Bhakti Shastri, it doesn't mean that one actually knows anything about spiritual life. One may know in a superficial way, but the real exchange of knowledge is when Krishna enlightens within the heart. So passing in an exam, that does not necessarily mean that one actually knows and realizes. That comes as a blessing, not by one's, not by diligence and application of intelligence in studying subject matter, even spiritual subject matter. So really the guru-disciple relationship is the very essence of spiritual life, but it is, yeah, it's very personal, and so it becomes problematic how to contain it in an institution. Can be problematic when institution means it has certain rules and regulations and policies which individuals might not always, individually strong-minded spiritual leaders may not always agree with that. In fact, this question came up because one of the gurus in ISKCON, so I'm told, came here and was asked about this because this had been stated in a GBC prescribed course that one can approach a Shiksha guru. And an ISKCON initiating guru came here just after this course, and devotees who are a little doubtful about it asked him about that, and he vehemently rejected this. So there you go. Then I was asked, and then you'll ask, what are you going to do? Take a survey? And okay, 61 gurus said yes and 21 said no. Okay, it must be right. But the truth is independent of opinion. So what is the truth? The truth is that in such matters you can't always legislate it. What may be right in one situation might not be right in another. Shastra gives allowance for one to approach others as Shiksha gurus. But that doesn't mean that one, just like someone's married and then afterward they look over the fence and say, well, actually I like the husband of my next door neighbor better than my own husband. Okay, then jump over the fence. So it's not like that. It's not like changing a pair of socks, something like this. It's not such a petty thing. One accepts a guru and then goes to someone else and someone else. Some years ago, someone asked me if they asked me about taking initiation. I said, okay, then you can consider that. Then afterward, they said, no, I think I'm going to go to someone else. And then I heard that that person had already been through 6 or 7 gurus like that, approaching and asking for initiation. But they don't approach unless you're really ready to commit. Otherwise it becomes farcical and can be offensive also. That if one asks or enters into a relationship and for no good reason just rejects it. So there are many considerations. Hare Krishna. Another question, there may be so many questions. Devotees of Lord Narayan can become pure devotees. How they get sufficient higher taste to transcend the material modes when they worship in awe and reverence? I wondered this about the Ajamil pastime when he chanted Narayana but went back to Godhead. Eventually, it seems he was very attached to the perverted reflection of Madhurya Ras. How are devotees of Lord Narayana elevated above the three modes? Because devotion to Lord Narayana is transcendental. It's not within the three modes of nature. There is a higher taste. For those who are fortunate to have heard Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings about Vraja Bhakti, the devotion to Narayana might seem to be a very small thing, but it's not a very small thing. Worshipping awe and reverence means it's not like the awe and reverence of this world, where one is afraid, Like the children are afraid in the school that they'll get beaten. Actually, I don't beat them nowadays, and that's why they're not afraid, and that's why they don't learn anything. Whoops. I might get censured for saying that. One may have awe and reverence in Stalin's regime. You may have awe and reverence because if you don't, you're more likely to lose your life early. Even if you do have awe and reverence, you might lose your life early. But if one is openly defiant of a despot, then one is almost certain to lose one's life very early in such a situation. But this awe and reverence doesn't mean there's no love or affection or appreciation of the sweetness of Narayana. Actually, we find, just like in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, very important are the Divya Prabandha, the 4,000 hymns sung by the Alvas. So they're sung in praise of different forms of Krishna, different deities of Narayana, I should say. But most of them, the majority, numerically, most of them are about Krishna. One of the greatest followers, later he came in the disciplic line of Ramanuja, this Vedanta Deshika. He made one Gopala Vinshati, 20 prayers to Gopal, praying to Krishna. He prayed to the Rajagopal at, where was the... Oh, I just can't remember the name of the place. In Tamil Nadu, there's one town being Mani, can't remember. So, in that he praises Krishna and the gopis. And that's still a very popular song in their sampradaya, which they sing it at marriages. And he prayed it that at the time of death, 20 prayers, 20 verses in praise of Gopal. So he prayed that the vision of Gopal may be there at the time of his death. So it's not that there's no ras in worshipping Narayan. He's not just some kind of robot who sits on a throne. There's feeling. We also the... Another great acharya in the Ramanuja line, this Annama Acharya, he sung so many songs about Lakshmi Narayana. He sung about the conjugal love between Lakshmi and Sri and Venkateshwar. So it is there also. It's not that it's not there, but the mood of awe and reverence is predominant. Whereas in Raja Bhakti, the mood of awe and reverence is, it's not premanence. Aishwarya Gane Shitila Prem, that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that feelings of awe and reverence toward the Supreme Lord, that slacken, or they dilute the feelings of prem. But it doesn't mean it's not there. We shouldn't think that there's no feeling. There's no loving feeling. Certainly that is there between the devotees of Narayana and Narayana. Just like, for instance, there are so many instances. One is the story of the cobbler who was told by Narad Muni that Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha is putting an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler was very happy to hear that. He thought, oh, how wonderful is my Lord that he's doing with great, certainly with awe and reverence, but with great feeling for the Lord. He thought, oh, how wonderful is my Lord that he's performing such a feat. So feeling is there. Definitely feeling is there. Hare Krishna.